Blog Talk Radio.
I'm alright. Nobody's worried about me. Why you got to give me a fight? Can't you just let it be? I'm alright.
Welcome to Own Your Life with me, your host, Dennis Carradine. The road to owning your success takes dedication, hard work, education, and change. This show is dedicated to helping you start on the path to owning your success and your life. Good evening and welcome to Own Your Life. I'm your host, Dennis. Hope all is well in your little area of the world tonight. Before we get into our topic, this whole idea, the reasons behind the unrest in Baltimore, let's go over some of our social media stuff, at least get that out of the way and then get into the meat of things. You could always follow me on the web at www.dennisgarrettin.com. or my practice site at newperspectivesinc.com, or our foundation at thetraumasurvivorsfoundation.com. Go to Facebook and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dennis Carradine Jr. or /New Perspectives Inc. or /The Trauma Survivors Foundation. Follow us on Twitter at Dennis Carradine or at New Perspective Inc. or at TTSF and the number 2, TTSF2. And as always, follow me here on Wednesday nights on blogtalkradio.com/Dennis Carradine. And if you ever have any questions, thoughts, or anything about these shows or about any of the podcasts or anything like that, please do not hesitate to email me at Dennis@NewPerspectivesInc.com. And there we go, folks. It's out of the way. So let's kind of get into it. The reasons behind the unrest in Baltimore. If you have been living under a rock and you have not seen this, obviously the past several days have been pretty tumultuous in the Charm City down in Baltimore, Maryland. All stemmed from the arrest and death of Freddie Gray, or at least that's what it looks like at this point. Not that he did not die and there was not an arrest. That the fact is that we've had a tinderbox in Baltimore and in any town USA for several years. And the idea of tonight's show is to kind of put the facts out there and then also to discuss what really went wrong. That this wasn't just a thought of racism. This wasn't because of one person's death or two people's death or whatever it was, is that this has been a systematic issue that's been going on for years. And again, before we even get into the facts or before any of that, I want you to keep in mind that this is an opinion. This is my thoughts. Am I going to give you something that automatically will miraculously open up the heavens and then change everything in the world and make everything right? Well, my hope is that'll happen, but in reality, that's not going to happen. I'm giving you opinion. I'm giving you idea. I'm giving you thoughts that maybe you put in the back of your mind and you say, you know what, that may or may not work. And at least give you the ability to look at things in a different light. I also want to say that as I discuss this, I'm taking away all political sides. I'm taking away anything other than just thoughts from previous behaviors, our history in our society, and things that have been going on that have created this mess that we know of as of April 2015. Okay? Just for the record, and I put this as record only before we even go into this, I am a registered Republican. Okay? I was president of the Young Republican Society at one point. I am a registered Republican. I am not a Democrat. I am not a liberal. I am not, you know, anything other than what I am. I'm also a therapist. Now, here's the funny part. I'm a Republican that's never voted Republican. I voted Democrat because my party tends to not like mental health. So there we are. There's what I am. And this is where this stuff comes from. So I want to start real simple. Let's go over the facts. Let's go over what we know. Okay? Let's go over what we know about the case in Baltimore, and then let's extrapolate a little bit, and let's kind of go into some of the issues at hand. So we know pretty clear that all of the protests and accusations of police brutality sparked from the arrest and then the eventual death of Freddie Gray of April 12th. And that's not disputable. We know that this had started in a way. Gray was arrested on a weapons charge in a high crime area of Baltimore known for drugs. Now, Deputy Police Commissioner Jerry Rodriguez said that Gray gave up without the use of force. We know that. We know, again, fact, an officer apparently took his taser out and was prepared to use it on Gray, but he never deployed it. And none of the six officers involved in the arrest described using force against the 25-year-old. Gray was placed inside a police van and was able to talk. Okay, and this was all from Police Commissioner Jerry Rodriguez. Now, before anything else, and before anything what's going on, there is that video out there. And people say, well, that video is 100% proof that there was police brutality. And that wasn't the case. Because that video, although that it was a few seconds, had the man that was shooting the video saying that that Freddie Gray was tased. Even in the autopsy, it had shown that there were no pierce marks that you would see from a taser. There were nothing on his body outside of a spinal cord injury, which eventually he had succumbed to and had died. Okay, we know that when he was placed in the van, when he was taken out of the van, he could not talk and he couldn't and breathe. And then police have said that Gray was not buckled in with a seatbelt during the ride to the booking center. What we're unclear about, and reports are coming in and out about this, and it's out there, we just really don't know. It's unknown what caused the spinal cord injury that led to his death a week after the arrest. And it's also unknown if anything happened inside the van where he was alone. There was no one else in that van, and he was unbuckled to it. So there is reports that are coming out saying that a week prior to any of this, he had spinal cord surgery. Okay. We also know that segments of the police of the cell phone video shot from two different positions appear to begin after Gray had been arrested and showed officers dragging Gray, who was handcuffed, to the van. He was also screaming, saying, you know, it hurt or whatever it was. Okay. He was dragged a bit. We see this. Okay. One woman who recorded a video of the arrest said she knew Gray, but really didn't know what was going on. Okay, so what we saw, or at least said anything else, is that at 9:24 a.m., police called an ambulance for Gray after his arrest when he was still conscious and talking. At 8:54 a.m., police say Gray requested medical attention, including an inhaler, and an ambulance later took him to the University of Maryland Medical Center's shock trauma center. This is stuff that we know. Okay. Rawlings, Blake, and Deputy Police Commissioner Kevin Davis have said that the arresting officers should have asked for medical attention immediately after Gray had asked for it. There was a little bit of a delay, okay? And we know that there was a little bit of delay. So we know that was going on. We know these as facts. Now, also as facts of what we know is that according to court documents, there were more than 20 criminal court cases in Maryland against Gray. And five of those cases were still active at the time of his death. The cases involved mostly drug-related charges, but there are charges from March for second-degree assault and destruction of property. We also know that Gray was due in court on a possession charge on April 2004. Now, keep in mind, I am just saying what the knowns are. I am not saying that this guy was a bad guy. I'm not saying that he was horrible. He had it coming to him. I'm not saying any of that. But these are the things that we know. All right? These are facts. You can look it up. Apparently, you know, little Facebook posts are going out and so forth. That's what was known. We know that he'd been in and out of prison since 2009 for various drug cases. In February 2009, he was sentenced to 4 years in prison for two counts of drug possession with intent to deliver. Okay, Gray was also paroled on June 30th, 2011. On April 4th, 2012, Gray was arrested for violating parole, but he didn't go back to prison. He said it was because of something minor had happened with that. Gray did return to prison in May 2013 for drug possession, serving a month behind bars before his release in June. Okay, Now, what we don't know is whether Gray's criminal past had anything to do with his arrest or his death. We don't know if the officers that they actually ended up releasing their names, we don't know if he knew them. We don't know if they knew his history or anything like that. Okay? Now, here's the deal. This is the background. This is what happened. We know that he went in talking and screaming and he was breathing. We also see in the video that he was supporting himself, that the police were not holding him up as he got into the van. You know, we know this. We also know, which I think was kind of interesting, that when he was apprehended, when he was arrested, that court documents allege, or, you know, and it'll all come out in trial or so forth, that Baltimore Police Department officer Garrett Miller arrested Gray after finding a switchblade in his pocket. The police never saw the knife and chased Gray only after he ran from them, the attorney said. But what they did find out was that he was carrying a concealed, not switchblade, but one of the one-hand operated knife. So he had something clipped into his front pocket, okay, in Maryland, okay, very simple. Maryland law makes it illegal to wear or carry a dangerous weapon of any kind, including switchblades, concealed on or about the person, okay? So here we have a guy that has 20 run-ins with the police, arrests, jail time, you name it. He is somewhere where drugs are sold, and he has a concealed knife, okay? My only thought was, should we have turned the other way and let him walk away, or should we have tried to apprehend him? Okay. The timeline of events then after that, you know, pretty muddled. And we know that as for the funeral aspect of it, it was 11 a.m. and this was on Monday. Funeral for Freddie Gray was ready to go. The casket came in at 1:42. At 3 o'clock, however, a flyer from a local high school says that a purge is scheduled to start, according to the Baltimore Sun. And the purge, which we reckoned the film The Purge, states that all laws were suspended for about 24-hour period. So we're already starting to see flyers saying, hey, something's going to happen. Okay, about 3:30 p.m., police can be seen gathering on the streets of Baltimore. Protesters begin to confront the riot police about 3:34. About 3:41, protesters start throwing bottles at police officers and journalists. Now, this was all on Monday after the funeral. The funny part, the odd part about this is that the funeral itself was very solemn. There was no anger in the funeral and so forth. The problem was outside. Now, here's my contention with all this. Those are the facts. Those are what we have, or what our knowns are. Okay. What we don't know is what's really going on with this crowd. Now, here's where it came into play. This is what the reasonings and so forth are behind it. And I want to read a post. I made a post the other night on Facebook, just kind of my thoughts out there in general. I'm going to read it to you, and then I want to discuss it a little bit more and put it out there. And this post itself, remember, a little raw, you know, we got a little curses in there, but then, you know, hey, it's life. Okay. This is what I put out there just as my thoughts. And I said, and I quote myself with this, are we so blind as a country, a nation, a society, a people that we truly do not see what led to the riots in Baltimore this past week? Baltimore, like any other city in America, including my beloved Wilmington, Delaware, are nothing but tinderboxes waiting to ignite. We believe the reason for it is in the name of justice, or because of racism, or because of the poor or the scumbags or whatever else people are saying it is because of. It's simple. At least the answer is simple. We failed our society. We did it. We failed it. Okay? And here's the other PETA. You know, we failed our own society by allowing our leaders to fail us. We voted for people who took away from education and put it towards the defense of bullshit countries no one cared about instead of getting the job done when our nation was in jeopardy. We turned our backs on the middle class values and widened the gap between the poor and the rich. We idolize morons like the Kardashians and sports figures. We accept poor treatment of the elderly and the disposal of children. We allow the mistreatment of the police and tied their hands to allow criminals to go through the courts like they were revolving doors. We accept high gas prices and do nothing but bitch and moan versus demanding change. We accept stupidity and forget to demand something from ourselves. Violence erupts when people have nothing else or care about nothing else. Violence erupts because the uneducated masses of our society have learned nothing else from society besides violence. I hear things like put a wall around them, kill them all, tell them go back to their own countries. Really? Why? Because we are so non-gloriously screwed up ourselves? Read the history books and take a look back. Change has always been a part of our country, but we always backed our people instead of turning our backs on them. We as society have lost sight of who we are. We blew it, and we are the only ones that could truly fix it. So part of my post. So let's go over it. How did we blow it? What made Freddie Gray's death so important? What made Michael Brown's death so important in Ferguson? Well, it had nothing to do with it. They were the spark that ignited the tinderbox. Okay, let's kind of put it in number terms and reality. We know that right now that in our country we have between an 84 and 87% recidivism rate with criminals within our jail systems. Recidivism rate basically means is that the person that goes to jail has an 84 to 87% chance to go back to jail by doing something wrong. We even hear terms called institutionalization or people being institutionalized, meaning that they've been to jail or they stayed in jail long enough is that it provides them structure. They don't have to think for themselves. It puts them in the place, and when they get out, they can't stand being out because they've been institutionalized. We know this. The other thing that we know is that we're now at a money and time issue. That money and time issue goes hand in hand with things. I had followed up my post a little bit, and I want to read that as a quote too. I followed up with a post about money and time. I said, the issue is a money and time issue. Schools are replete with issues because of a lack of funding and parent involvement. Of course, we could look at Catholic and private schools or schools in wealthier areas and say those problems do not exist. But in all truth, our issues exist exclusively. Other issues exist exclusively to those school districts. Increased violence against teachers, drug use, teen pregnancy, alcohol use, and so on are not exclusive to the inner city schools. Even in school districts with incredible teachers, problems exist stemming from the lack of caring and or support on the behalf of the parents. Albeit a lesser form of ignorance, it is ignorance on the parents nonetheless. Prime example, 5 of the most horrific school shootings I responded to were in wealthy school districts, suggesting maybe it was not a money issue, but rather a time issue. Time not spent with the kids or parenting the kids or just being there for the kids. Either way, solutions must focus on money and time, both of which need to be well spent. So here we have a couple of issues. Society, we blew it. Education, we blew it. Parents, we blew it. We did this. We created the tinderbox down there. We created the tinderbox in any of our societies. Okay? We want to place blame? We want to put the fingers? Of course we do. We have to put the blame on ourselves because that's the only way these things change. Okay, here we are. We're in 2015. Do you respect your politicians anymore? Do you respect the people that are making laws for us? Do you respect the people that are helping us? No, none of us do. And if you do, you're lying to me. Because we look at our politicians now as a source of the problem and a joke. Okay, I mean, honestly, you know, let's be honest. Do we have people that we really look up to and say, wow, you know, they are changing the world here? And this has been a gradual approach to things. The minute that we had problems in our government, it was our right as citizens to change it. Okay, why are we getting stuck with having to deal with things that we shouldn't deal with? That's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it, let's kind of look at the police officers in and of themselves, okay? I work with them. I train them. I'm related to them. I am friends with them. There are ones that are horrible. There are ones that are scumbags. But guess what? They're scumbags that are politicians. They're scumbags that work at a Wendy's or a fast food place. Okay, being an officer doesn't automatically mean that you're the enemy. But what they are dealing with right now defies even the imaginable. Okay, they are dealing with a system that tells them that you lose. You lose no matter what. You lose if you're doing a good job. You lose if you're doing a bad job. You lose if you miss the bad guy, but you lose because the bad guy automatically gets out if you catch him. They're in a lose-lose situation. It's almost like the idea of baseball. Baseball as a game is a losing game. That's why you have batting average and so forth, because ultimately you're not going to hit every pitch. You're not going to catch every ball. It's a losing mentality. So if we have a losing mentality among our police, we have a losing mentality among our politicians, then what else happens? Well, we get a losing mentality of our education system. We get a losing mentality of our parents. We get a losing mentality of where our needs are. Okay, I did a little investigation, which I always do for these classes and so forth, for these podcasts and so forth. And again, you could check it out. It's out there. It's on the web. You know, it's out there in these magical things called books. The School Nutrition Association. And bear with me with this one. We know that the School Nutrition Association with the National School Lunch Program, roughly to feed one child one day for lunch, is roughly across the nation $2.08. $2.08 to feed one child one day. Sadly, in areas of our world, and it doesn't matter if they're white, black, Hispanic, it doesn't, because you go to West Virginia and you're going to get a bunch of white kids. You go to Western Pennsylvania, a bunch of white kids. You go to inner city Philadelphia, a bunch of black kids. It doesn't matter. It's wherever it is that there's impoverished people. And these lunch programs, which are pretty cool, some of these kids, that's the only meal of the day that they eat, the only healthy meal of the day that they could eat, right? $2.08 to feed one child. And I did the numbers on this. In 2012, during the presidential election, Mitt Romney and President Obama, both individually, their campaigns raised $1 billion. $1 billion, with a B, folks. $1 billion, which we still don't know, because they don't have to necessarily tell us where all the money goes or where it will be spent and so forth, but we probably can gather that it was spent on people paying people to help them out, or paying for lunches or dinners, or it was paid for those advertisements that ran every two freaking seconds, or the stupid plastic crap of pens and billboards and so forth. $1 billion. I did the math. You do the math. Take $1 billion. Okay, divided by $2.08, you get literally 481 quadrillion meals that could have been paid for by that $1 million, right? So then I did a little something else, okay? I went in and I looked at the National Education Program of how much does it cost for books per grade school student per year. Per year, grade school student could cost the district $20 for the entire year if they were to give children books for the year. And why I say this, and here's where I'm going to go with education for a second. So $20. Now, if you go to college, you know, like me, that we probably spent $800 on one book and only got $3 back. But, you know, if we do this for grade school, it's going to cost roughly per child $20 per year for their books if we put them into the school programs. Take $1 billion, okay, $1 billion divided by 20. You're still in the quadrillions. It's insane. It's insane of where we allow this money to go in our society. We have schools, and I have a very good teacher friend of mine that teaches in an inner city school in Philadelphia, and the stories that she'll tell me that just absolutely breaks my heart. You know, kids that are coming in that they're sharing a book between 10 of them, or they have to make Xerox copies of the pages of the book before the book falls apart. Okay, these are our children. Where are we going wrong? We are not putting money into the education. And people say, no, we put it in and it's AYP. It's a bunch of crap. We put money into better school districts, but we don't build up other school districts. We keep people down. So if we continue to keep people down based in their, you know, the socioeconomic level or whatever it is, eventually they're going to fight back. They're not going to care. Remember, it's a whole theory of learned helplessness, okay? Theory of learned helplessness, Martin Seligman up in Philadelphia, define this theory, okay? What he did was he would take dogs and he would bring them to a room and he'd have an electrified floor, okay? The dogs would come in, do their dog things or whatever it is, and he would electrify one half of the floor, okay? Obviously, the dogs would freak out and they would jump to the other half of the floor, okay? And eventually, he electrified the entire floor. Dogs would jump, but after a while, he noticed, Marty Seligman had noticed, is that they just laid down. They did nothing. They accepted the punishment because that they knew no amount of effort would work for them to get out of their situation. So we have created, as a society, right now, we have created not just one, not just two, but multiple generations of people that feel that they can't get out of where they are, okay? That they're stuck. They've learned helplessness. So when you're helpless and hopeless, then you have something that says we could go and do something and we can get angry and we could express our anger, then they're going to do it. And it doesn't mean it's just in Baltimore. It isn't just a black and white thing. It's anybody that's been pushed down in our society. Okay, and again, let's extrapolate it a little bit more. And I'm also, you know, I'm also going to be fair about this a little bit. Do I believe that somebody working at McDonald's should make $15, $16 an hour for being a fast food service? No, absolutely not. That's insane. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about just throwing money at people. I'm talking about throwing money into our educational systems to get people to be empowered instead of disenfranchised. All right? This is the problem. All right? It's also mob mentality. I mean, we also know is that when people are put into a position where they could be anonymous and they could throw out their anger, you know, they go into this mob mentality. So here we have people that have been pushed down. We have a society that's given up on our own folks. We haven't stood up for ourselves. And again, going back to that, what I said in my little post here, how many of you out there listening to the show right now were angry a few years ago when we topped $4 for gas? And what did we do? What did we do? I honestly, as a society, what did we do? Nothing. We did nothing. We stopped driving. Okay, so basically the gas prices themselves made us completely stop driving. That's a bunch of crap because we drove. Okay, we might not have done the long trips, but we still had to drive here and there, drive the kids to school, had to get to work. We still drove, all right? We didn't change that, but we bitched and we complained and we moaned and, oh, gas prices are horrible and it's this one, it's that one. We're pointing fingers at everybody, but we didn't create a change. So now we got a bone thrown at us a few months ago, and we saw gas prices here in Delaware go a little bit under $1. It went to, what, $1.98. Oh, my God. There was rejoicing. We're filling things up. We're filling gallon jugs up and holding it up in the air, and we still did nothing. We didn't yell and scream and say, why weren't these prices this way years ago? We did nothing. Nothing as a society. And now they're up to like $2.75, $2.77 again, whatever the prices are, $2.55. Something like that. Have we done anything? We haven't done anything. We are accepting this helplessness. We are accepting this beatdown is what we're doing. So here's that mob mentality. These people that have been disenfranchised, they're not making money. They're not educated. Not all of them. There are some great people down there. But you have people that are just so upset and so mad at the system, and sometimes rightfully so. So we hear the term mob mentality. We know that it's used to refer to unique behavioral characteristics that emerge when people are in large group. And it's often used in negative sense because the term mob typically conjures up an image of an aggressive, chaotic group of people. And we know social psychologists who study group behavior also use terms such as herd behavior or herd mentality or crowd hysteria to describe similar behaviors. The study of mob mentality is used to analyze situations that range from problems during evacuations to public gatherings that turn violent. So mob mentality. Let's change this for a second. Let's go back a few years. Okay, we all remember those images of New Orleans. We all remember the images of Hurricane Katrina and so forth. What absolutely drove me insane was how the media covered this. And this is where I'm switching to for a second. Because here's another problem that we have where we blew it in society. when was it okay for the media to change our minds? When was it okay for the media to tell us what we should think? Well, somewhere along the line it did. Somewhere along the line we said it was okay. Because if you remember back, there was this image, this image from the American Association, or was it the Associated Press, I'm sorry, where they have two images. One, two white kids that apparently found some food items and were bringing it back to their family. And then it had one black boy who looted a grocery store and stole objects. Okay? We have our media right now that's telling us what to think. Even in Ferguson, if you remember Ferguson and when that all broke out, and I remember being with my group of buddies and we were sitting at the Delaware Association of Police watching this whole thing go down, and you saw the reporters almost baring their teeth and saying, here we go, this is going to be the greatest story. Watching some of these knuckleheads stand there while gas bombs were exploding around them for the crowd control of it, almost taunting people saying, hey, here it is, this is racism at its best. So we have a society now that believes the media should make us think a certain way. So we go back to it all, disenfranchised, feeling helpless and hopeless, education out the window, media telling us what we want, and a society that has gone soft, a society that's not standing up for what they believe and saying, look, stop it. Stop hurting us. Stop telling us what we should do. There are probably times that you have felt, you as listening to this, that you have felt that there has been some injustice in your own little world. But did you do anything about it? Did you write your congressman? Did you vote a different way? Did you get angry? You know, what I've seen with people, which I think is just, it's wild. Maybe it's another form of learned helplessness. Okay, instead of enacting change, they stop. All right, I've talked to more people that said, forget this, I am not going into this election. I'm not going to vote. Okay, so we give up again. Again, we created the situation. We created the tinderbox because of our mentalities. And think of our role models now. Think of what kids are seeing now. Okay? And I said it earlier, the Kardashians. Why do these people exist? Why do we know their names? Okay? We know that Kim Kardashian had a porn video. Yay! Who cares? Next thing we know that they are there in pop culture telling us what we should wear and what we should do and we should actually care. They're actually pretty despicable people. They're actually pretty horrible. You know, if you think about some of the tweets and the things and the values that they show, they're pretty horrible. Okay, let's get pregnant by somebody else while we're still married, but only have a fake marriage for a few months, blah, blah, blah. Ugh. And then we wonder why our kids aren't looking up to our parents. We wonder why that the parents shut us down. You know, I get more and more kids that come into counseling that it's not their fault. It's their parents' fault. The parents don't discipline anymore because I guess our society tells them that, hey, you should never discipline your kids. Let them go. That it's okay for kids to have a 52nd place trophy. When did that become okay? When did it become okay for us not to stand up for ourselves? And when was it okay for us not to think and make decisions? There was a meme that came out, and the meme was pretty, I don't know, I liked it. I thought it was pretty spectacular. It had three black men. It had one in handcuffs, one in a suit, and one as an officer. Okay, so obviously criminal, attorney, and a police officer. And underneath said all three had choices and decisions to make in their lives. And I thought that was perfect. I thought that was absolutely perfect. I'm not sitting here to tell you that I have all the answers. I'm not sitting here to tell you that any of my rantings make any sense or anything. But I can say this, and I know this from just my history, from dealing with people, is that we all have decisions. We all have choices. But when the majority of us accept mediocrity, accept what we are force-fed into believing, then we got a problem. You know, what do they say? You know, one person is great and outstanding. A group of people are chaotic and crazy and so forth. Take a simple look at yourself. Take a simple look at yourself today and ask yourself, how did I fix anything? How did I fix or change any problems today? How did I make my world a little bit better? How did I make my people's world a little bit better? Okay, start with that. Start with the fact with your own kids. You know, go back. If you have kids, did you do something today to build them up? Did you do something today that made them feel good about themselves? Did you tell them that they were good people? And I'm not saying praise for not praising, but did you actually build these kids up? Did you make sure that they were getting education today? Did you make sure that they learned something or that they know that they were loved, that ultimately they knew that you were going to be there to support them, that you didn't have any other agenda except knowing that, hey, these kids are ultimately going to be our leaders next time, okay? Or were you some jerk parent that wants to be friends with their kids, that it's okay for the kids to drink at age 16 at a drinking party because you were there? Okay, or that you really don't know what the kid's homework is, that you don't know what they're supposed to turn in or what they're supposed to hand in. I'll be the first to admit it. My son and I, you know, he's my buddy. I love my son to death, but I am exceptionally hard on my son. He's been struggling in school. I'm not going to lie. You know, he goes to Catholic school, Catholic high school, and he's been struggling. Well, every day now, every day for the past several months now, I check not only his homework, but I go online and I check his assignments. And I tell him, you do this, you do that. You know, I gave him my old vehicle and I told him, if you don't get the grades, then you're not driving. I'm trying to enforce discipline to him. I'm trying to tell him that he could be whatever he wants to be and to build him up. Am I father of the year? Absolutely not. There's better fathers than I am. But in all truth, it only takes a little bit to build these kids up. So, okay, let's curse the ones down in Baltimore. Let's say that these are scumbags, that these are people that have no family values and nothing. But didn't we do this? Didn't we create this as a society? Didn't we develop the problems that are out there? Well, no, it was drugs. It was this. Everything goes back to the same representation. If people are uneducated, they don't have money, they don't have any way of getting out of their system, then of course they're only going to do what they know how to do. When did we stop understanding that our kids should be better than us, that we should raise them to be a little bit better than us, that we raise them that they should have values and morals and a belief system, that they should respect authority figures? But here's the deal. How are they going to respect authority figures when we can't even trust them anymore, when we can't trust the politicians to do the right thing? You know, I heard another statistic on MoneyWise. Hillary Clinton right now, her goal is to raise, which it'll probably happen, to raise $2.6 billion, $2.6 billion to do a campaign for her presidency, which means is that somebody else that wants to win is going to have to raise $3 billion. And it goes on and on and on and on. The haves and the have-nots have continued to spread apart. And so how can we look at our kids and say these politicians are great, that they make changes, when we find that they really don't make any changes? And it starts very simple. It starts at our local administrations, our county commissioners. It starts with our mayors and our governors. If these are people that we can't rely on, how the hell are we going to rely on Congress or the Senate or the presidency? Okay, and this isn't political bashing. This is just what it is. If we don't have people that we can look up to in our society, then I don't know what we could do. Sports figures, another one. Now we have kids that love sports figures, which some of these athletes are just garbage. They're animals. I mean, it's just horrible. I looked at, I'm a Boston fan. We all know this. But I looked at, you know, the people cheering for A-Rod as he came back his first game. I think, why are you cheering this guy? He shouldn't even be playing the game anymore. He cheated. And not only did he cheat, but he basically stuck his middle finger up to any baseball-loving person. And yet we're cheering him because he's back on the team. Why? Because he scores points and he looks good on our fantasy league or whatever it is? I don't know. It's insane. This shouldn't be where our society is. Okay. Now, all that said, am I ranting? Do I have solutions? Well, I've talked about them. We need to put more money and time back into the youth. You know, I am a firm believer that all the little turtles don't make it to the sea. That some people, you know, they're unchangeable. They're uneducatable. They're all un-whatever. But there's a whole vast majority of people that can be educated. There's a vast majority of people that can be changed so that these tinderboxes that we call our cities right now can switch. That we could show people that there is actually a purpose to living instead of just existing, trying to get by every day and not dying, trying to do something more with our lives than existing on a street corner, that we can actually do something and be great and be a great nation. Because clearly, if you've ever seen that Jeff Daniels rant, we're not a great nation anymore. We kind of suck, and we suck in a really bad way. You know, and we got to start changing this around. If we don't change it around, then we're going to see more and more of this. We're going to see the tinderboxes explode in every city in the United States. And whose fault is it? Well, it's got to be the people that are causing the riots. It's their fault. It's this fault. Oh, crap. It's all of our faults. We have to demand better from ourselves. We have to look at the politicians and our leaders and say, we deserve more. We deserve more than what you're giving us. We deserve a fair shake. We deserve something that we can call our own. We deserve something that makes us feel proud about being an American again, about being in the United States and being a great country. That's what we deserve, and we should stand up and say it. Now, hopefully, you've listened to this and you said, okay, Dennis, you're right. Where's our first step? The first step is in your own home. The first step is to take care of what we need to take care of. When we put all of our stuff away and we get our house in order, then we go to the next house and the next house and the next house. We help our society. All right? Volunteer. Do something. Do anything. Tell your kids to get off the couch. Quit playing the video games and get out and do something. Volunteer at a local soup kitchen and see what the world is really like. You know, do something. And it's not just the middle class people. Lower class, upper class, all of us have to do something to create this change. Okay, and don't give me the crap that we're in a capitalist society or anything like that. Don't. You know, because that's just a pathetic response to something where you could change. By saying that, you're telling me you're unwilling to change. We all can change. And we could do this. And we could actually finally snuff out the tinderbox effect. We could stop this garbage from going on and on and on. You know, now, in my bid, I pray that this ends soon. And somewhere along the line that these riots down there will stop. I am hopeful they will stop. I'm afraid for this upcoming weekend that they won't stop, that they'll spark up again. And I do. My thoughts and prayers are with all the emergency services down there. But my thoughts and prayers are also for all the good people, all the people in those areas that have tried to live their lives the best way that they can. You know, we need to change. We as a society need to change. And it needs to start now. It can't wait anymore. Demand more. Demand better. And also demand something from yourself. Don't be that person that just becomes sheep. And just go about the normal and just accept it all. Be wonderful. Be great. Be amazing people. But you got to do that or our society will just continue to explode. And sadly, implode at the same time. Ooh, got deep at the end there. I hope this all made sense. I hope it made sense to you. It's sad, but, you know, I hope it opens up some eyes and so forth. So towards the end here, I want to give you a couple of announcements, a little bit about what's going on here in our little worlds. And remember, always come back on Wednesdays. And if you have any questions about this this podcast, give me an email at dennis@newperspectivesinc.com. But a couple of fun things with the Trauma Survivors Foundation. All right, some good stuff, and I'm putting it out there. Please go to our website at thetraumasurvivorsfoundation.com or facebook.com/thetraumasurvivorsfoundation. We have some cool things coming up. One of our biggest things that we have coming up is on November 6th. We have our Black Tie and Sneakers Gala. That's right. You get to wear tuxedos and you get to wear tennis shoes. And you come to the Wilmington Sheridan South on Airport Road in Wilmington and you have a great time. Tickets are only $75 apiece. You can buy it through the web. Please buy them earlier because we are starting to sell out pretty quickly. But we're also looking for any donations of silent auction prizes or ticket auction. We also need people to come in and sponsor the event and so forth, but it's going to be a great time. We had a fantastic time last year, and we're going to have the party of the year this year coming up. Also, we have special rates at the Sheridan. I think it's $100 for a junior suite, and just amazing stuff. The food over there is phenomenal, so that we have that going on. The other thing that we have going on, and go to that foundation site, is that we have a custom fire helmet and shield raffle that's going on. Our friends over at American Art Tattoo, Dave Scott and them over there, are going to help us out with this one. So Dave Scott and Claudia over there are going to design for us a helmet. Now, here's the deal. It's $5. You go in for a $5 raffle ticket, and you get the ability to tell them, hey, this is what I want on my helmet. Now, here's the fun part is Claudia, she's going to design it for you. She's going to draw things up, and she's going to put it on canvas. And then you're going to have a picture of what you want on your helmet, and then ultimately it gets airbrushed on your helmet. Now, obviously, it's better for emergency services, but if you know anybody that's in emergency services, this might be a cool gift for them. They get to sit down for that consultation. And remember, it's only $5. It's also, you can do 3 tickets for 12. So it's a bargain, folks. But get on the website, thetraumasurvivorsfoundation.com or facebook.com/thetraumasurvivorsfoundation and get in there and buy some of these raffle tickets. It's going to be a fun time. We're actually going to set it off. We're going to pick the winner September 11th, 2015, and we're going to be picking the winner from New York during September 11th during the remembrance ceremonies up there. So keep in mind that's going on. The Black Tie and Sneakers Gala is going on. So some fun stuff coming up for the foundation. And if you don't know about the Trauma Survivors Foundation, please go to the website again, read about us. But we're there to help others. We're there to help people that have survived traumatic injury and traumatic events. And we're also there to help people that are involved in the emergency services. And finally, we're trying to build up our scholarship section because, sadly, we have the grain of the psychology world. We're getting older. We're not many people are taking over the job. And we want to help with scholarships and so forth to get people interested. So I hope all this helps. I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. Remember, please, 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 please come back and follow me here on blogtalkradio.com/Dennis Carradine. Be good to yourself. Be good to the people around you. Do me a favor. Make sure you tell the people in your life that you love and care for. And make sure you reach out. You know, and if you haven't talked to a friend in a while, talk to them. If you haven't called your mom and dad and told them that you love them, call your mom and dad and tell them that you love them. But do me a favor. Everything starts at home. Take care of home and then take care of our society and we'll be pretty great one day again. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next time.
You could be my luck, even if the sky wrong with you, girl? Hey.
Mm-hmm.